If you will, open a Bible with me to Isaiah chapter 2. That is where we are going to be here in just a few moments. Isaiah chapter 2. And I believe that Tony is going to hand out some sheets for you to follow along with. It always helps me to have something interactive to write on and follow along, take notes. And so each one of our lessons, we're going to have those, and I hope that they are encouraging to you. Thank you for being here, and thank you for this opportunity. I have been looking forward to this for quite a while. I appreciate you having it, having me. We live in challenging times, as Tony has already indicated, but my goal is really very, very simple. It is to make much of Jesus, to spend some time with you in the Bible, to try and encourage you, and I know that you're going to be an encouragement to me. I just appreciate the opportunity. I've known Tony for a long, long, long time. I've known Mark even longer. Mark and I go back to the late 90s when we were both, I think, still teenagers, if not barely 20 years old. And Mark and Tony have been very good friends to me, and it is special for me to be able to spend a couple of days with them, to get to know so many of you. I just really appreciate the opportunity. How many of you enjoy the mountains? I enjoy mountains. There are two, it seems like, two different kinds of people in the world. People who like the mountains and people who like the beach. I like the mountains. I am married to a girl who likes the beach, and so more often than not, we spend time at the beach than the mountains. I like coffee in the mountains. She likes sweet tea in the beach. I guess opposites attract. But the mountains are a very prominent theme in the Bible. I'd love just to spend this first session, a typical Bible class session, being as interactive with you as possible. And so let me just ask you for your input. When you think of mountains in the Bible, what do you think of? Mount what? Mount Sinai. What else? Mount Pisgah. Okay. What else? Moriah. Mount Moriah. What else? Ararat. There are lots of mountains in the Bible, right? We're going to talk about some of those that you have mentioned. When you think of events that happened on top of mountains, what do you think of? What sort of things happened on mountains in the Bible? Okay, Moses received the law. What else? Okay, God's presence is often experienced on mountains in various ways. We'll see that over the course of the next few days. What else? All right. Worship was often connected with mountains. And in one sense, we can appreciate that from a human point of view, right? You go up in the direction of God from a human point of view. We often read, especially in the Old Testament, about people going up to Jerusalem. And that had to do literally, of course, with ascending in elevation, but it also had to do with the significance of what happened in Jerusalem. Anything else that you can think of? Things that happened on mountains in the Bible. Jesus delivered the most famous sermon on the mountain. A mountain on the north shore of the Sea of Galilee. It's interesting to me, I didn't realize until very recently, we read the word mountain in the Bible more than we read cross and grace and gospel combined. There are a lot of mountains in the Bible. And so it seems to me that it is a worthwhile exercise to spend a little bit of time noticing what happened on these mountains that are so often talked about, described in the Bible. And so I'm going to invite you over the course of the next couple of days to meet God on the mountains. Let's look at it with a fresh set of eyes. Let's open our hearts. And I want to begin with you in Isaiah chapter 2. We're going to lay some groundwork in this Bible class period over the course of the next few minutes. And then, Lord willing, this morning we'll look at Mount Ararat, and this evening Mount Sinai, and so on and so forth. But Isaiah chapter 2, it seems like to me, is a great place to begin. You can begin reading with me in Isaiah 2 and verse 2, where we're told, "It shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain," this elevated place in the direction of the heavens, where many great events of significance happened in the Bible. Here is one description. "It shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the house of the Lord shall be established as the highest of the mountains, and shall be lifted up above the hills, and all the nations shall flow to it. And many peoples shall come and say, 'Come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, that He may teach us His ways, and that we may walk in His paths.'" An invitation to meet God on the mountains. I don't know what stands out to you, but I'd like just to kind of dissect this together and explore what you think, what is God through the prophet showing us, and what does it mean? Number one, the nations are flowing to this mountain. Now, that's not the way that we look at the world today, is it? It's certainly not the way most people look at the world today. Most look at this as we've got all sorts of nations, and every once in a while there are alliances and different sorts of agreements where we're going to get along for a little while. We've got common interests, maybe a common enemy that binds us together for a little while. But really, the way most look at the world is we've got all of these nations, and we're all heading in different directions, and here in the United States of America, we're heading in a different direction than North Korea, and the nation of Brazil is heading in a different direction than the nation of Canada. Very easy for us to live in a world, very easy for us to look at the world as, well, we're all just drifting a very long ways away from God. But I want you to notice that as long as God allows this world to stand, we may be heading in all sorts of different directions as individuals and as families, even as a church family, as nations. But this is all going to end somewhere. All of the various paths, all of the various choices that lead us in all sorts of different directions for a little while during our brief time on this earth, it's all going to end at the throne. We all have an appointment before the throne of Almighty God. And it doesn't matter what nation you're a part of, what ethnicity, what language you speak, whether you're rich or poor, slave or free, male or female, whatever it is, all nations, whether they know it or not, all people are flowing toward this mountain. Now, that doesn't have to be a terrifying thought. The blessings of this mountain are available to all people. What do you and I need to realize, do you think, about that? As we sit here in mid-September 2021, when we see from passages like this, the blessings of God are available to all. What ought that to spark in our hearts? What does that mean for the way that you live this week? The blessings of this mountain are available to all. What's that mean? Doesn't it mean, first and foremost, that you and I should never look down on anybody? Every single person you interact with this week, every single person you lock eyes with this week is created in God's image. Now, there are a lot of things that set us apart, right? A lot of things that set us on directions where we might be heading in completely opposite directions for a little while. And we may have a tough time agreeing on various things. They may have a very different way of looking at this country's greatest needs and the solutions to those great problems that our nations are involved in. But however much you disagree on how we got into the mess that we're in as a nation, or how we ought to handle the mess that we're in, and how we ought to look at the economy, and how we ought to look at, I mean, any number of that, you fill in the blanks. What unites all of us is, number one, we're created in the image of God, and number two, we are all going to spend eternity somewhere. Every single person you see this week is going to spend eternity somewhere. They need to hear about the blessings that flow from this mountain, blessings that are available to all. And they need to hear that because the impact of this mountain, it cannot be escaped. You might put a marker there in Isaiah 2 and open with me back to Daniel chapter 2. A great place to illustrate this idea of the impact of this mountain of the Lord. This figurative, metaphorical mountain that is being described for us in Isaiah chapter 2. You probably remember the setting of Daniel chapter 2. Who's the great king in Babylon in Daniel chapter 2? Nebuchadnezzar. King Nebuchadnezzar decides that it would be a great idea to build a 90-foot tall statue. And in Daniel chapter 1, every time that there is this music that is played throughout the empire, or Daniel chapter 3, I should say, every time this music is played, wouldn't it be awesome if all of my subjects throughout the empire bowed down to this mountain? Well, before that, in Daniel chapter 2, he's got a dream, right? And Daniel, this young Jew, exile in Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom, is able to interpret this dream. This is actually about empires, right? There's going to be the Babylonian Empire, this head of gold, and there are going to be successive world empires after that. But for our purposes right now, what I want you to notice is Daniel chapter 2, first of all, verses 34 and 35, where Daniel is describing what this dream really means. And he says in verse 34, "As you looked, a stone was cut out by no human hand, and it struck the image on its feet of iron and clay and broke them in pieces. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold all together were broken in pieces and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors, and the wind carried them away so that not a trace of them could be found, but the stone that struck the image." You remember the idea that all nations ultimately flowed to this mountain? In this great dream of a great image of different parts that represent the Babylonian Empire and the Medes and the Persians and the Grecians and the Romans, there is this stone that strikes at the base of this great image, and that stone became a great mountain. Have you ever noticed that? And this stone fills the earth. You skip down to verse 44. The God of heaven. What does all of this mean? The God of heaven will set up a kingdom that shall never be destroyed. If you're a Christian this morning, you're a part of that kingdom. A kingdom that has never been destroyed, is not destroyed this morning, never will be destroyed. Some of us enjoy talking about the Roman Empire or the Babylonian Empire. Most people don't. For most people, you gotta study a little bit to get through world history class in high school or college, and then it's been a long time outside of a Bible class or a sermon since you ever thought about the Babylonian Empire. Those are just footnotes of history. But there are disciples of Jesus all over the world today, dedicating this as the Lord's Day, talking about the Lord in the present tense. This kingdom will never be destroyed. All have an appointment with the King of this kingdom, a kingdom that brings all other kingdoms to an end. This kingdom alone shall stand. And so as we go back in our Bibles to Isaiah chapter 2, the nations flow to this mountain. Its blessings are available to all. Its impact cannot be escaped. And you notice once again from Isaiah chapter 2 verse 3, many are saying, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord. Now let's just pause there for a moment and let me ask you. Let's think through this out loud together. Why is it important for those who know the Lord of this mountain to say with their mouths and by their lives, come? Why does this world need to hear Christians who are gathered on this first day of the week, the Lord's Day? Why does this world need to hear people who love this King saying, come? Why does the world need this message? Mark? All right. We're on the same wavelength here. I put it as, number one, ascending this mountain doesn't happen by accident. Another way of putting that, number two, it's a choice. And the Lord designed it that way, right? The Lord is not going to pick anybody up by the nape of their neck and lift them and put them where they do not want to be. All nations flow to this mountain, but not everybody is prepared to meet the King. Okay? All have an appointment with this Lord, but not all are living as if He is the Lord. You think of how Paul in Romans chapter 1 describes the sad state of both Jews and Gentiles. And in Romans 1, it's like he digs all the way down to the root of our biggest problem, the problem of sin. And the way he describes it is, we don't honor God as God. There's the root of the problem. We all make the choice at some point in our lives to act as if we are bigger than God. What we want matters more than what God wants. and I think that I can do this, and if there is a God, I'll either have time to get that straightened out with him later, or if there is a God, he's probably not really going to hold me accountable. Does he really mean what I've heard that he has said? Is it really that big of a deal? And it is a big deal. That is our biggest problem. And this community and the community in which I live and every human community is full of people who have an appointment with this king, but they're not ready. And so what do the people who know this king, what is really the heartbeat of their life? What is the biggest, what are we really trying to win them to? I mean, let me just make it as real and as clear as I can possibly make it. If I convince my neighbor to look at politics the way that I look at politics, but I never say, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, I have wasted the greatest opportunity of my life. They have not heard from me what they need to hear most of all. Our great goal is not to get people to agree with us on all of the stuff that isn't going to last in eternity. Now, I'm not saying that there's no value in those sorts of things. There are very real issues all around us. But this is the pinnacle. This is the mountain. All of that other stuff, sports and recreation and politics and how to handle all sorts of challenges and opportunities in this life. It's like that's way down here in the valley. And for a little while we live in the valley. But 10,000 years from now, what's still going to matter? Whether or not, number one, I said with my mouth and by my life, come. And whether or not the people around me, created in His image, who are going to spend eternity somewhere, whether or not they chose to ascend this mountain. Now, let's go back in our Bibles to Psalm 24. It's important for us to see, okay, we're saying, come and see. What's the destination here? Well, in Isaiah 2, we heard it is the house of God. Come to the house of God. Come and see His ways. What is this destination that we are inviting people to? It's the house of God where, in the language of Isaiah 2, we are taught His ways and we learn to walk in His path. You and I are learning more about that, hopefully together, over the course of the next few days. What a great opportunity for those of us who love this King, who want to spend eternity with Him, to talk about who He is and learn more about His ways. Why are we going to spend time taking in the view from these various mountains over the course of the next few days? Well, I'll tell you what. We want to learn His ways. The God who made Himself powerfully known on so many of these mountains. We want to learn to walk in His paths. And so we're going to talk this week about some who did that and some who didn't. But on that front particularly, there have been times that I haven't. And I hear this talk of going up to the mountain, the house of the Lord, that I may learn of His ways and walk in His paths. And maybe my biggest obstacle is not a matter of knowledge, it's a matter of I'm not sure I'm worthy. You talk with enough people. You say with your mouth and by your life, come. Come and see. And you won't talk with very many people before you hear something like, I know I should, but I'm not good enough. I know I should, but you don't know what I've done. I know I should. I know that's life the way that it was meant to be, but I have made a royal mess of my life. Did you know that for thousands of years, people have been asking questions like Psalm 24, verse 3, who shall ascend the hill of the Lord? And who shall stand in His holy place? This is God's mountain. And so it ought not to surprise me at all that I hear in Psalm 24 and verse 4, he who has clean hands and a pure heart, who does not lift up his soul to what is false and does not swear deceitfully. That is the sort of person that is able to climb this mountain. But what if my hands aren't clean? And what if my heart isn't pure? And what if I have lifted up my soul to what I know is false in the past? When someone is willing to ask that sort of question, God has them right where He wants them. Let's open in our Bibles to Hebrews chapter 12. This is the heart of the gospel, the heart of the good news of Jesus Christ. Hands aren't clean. Heart isn't pure. Come. It is not go and straighten yourself out. Get your act together. Get your life together. And then come back. No, it is come. Your Bible open there to Hebrews chapter 12. Let's look at verse 18. Hebrews 12 beginning in verse 18. I want you to notice the language. For you have not come to what may be touched, a blazing fire and darkness and gloom and a tempest and the sound of a trumpet and a voice whose words made the hearers beg that no further messages be spoken to them. It's clear that this writer has a particular scene in mind. What is he envisioning here? What is he reminding his hearers of? It's a mountain. What mountain? Mount Sinai. You keep reading in verse 20. For they could not endure the order that was given. If even a beast touches the mountain, it shall be stoned. Indeed, so terrifying was the sight that Moses said, I tremble with fear. Now, there are some things that we can learn from Mount Sinai. Lord willing, this evening we'll figuratively ascend Mount Sinai and take in the view and see what we can see. See what we can learn. But that's not where we're being called today. Okay? We'll talk a little bit more about that dynamic this evening. But you and I are not being called to Mount Sinai. You and I are not being called to the old law of Moses. That's his whole point. He says in verse 22, but you have come to Mount Zion. Now it's going to take us a couple of days. And I invite you to hike with me. And be patient. And let's slowly work our way there. But Lord willing, hopefully by the end of our time together on Wednesday night, we'll see what an incredible statement that is. More to come. You have come to Mount Zion and to the city of the living God. But he's really careful to make sure that we understand. He's not talking about a literal mountain, and he's not talking about the literal city of Jerusalem. You've come to the heavenly Jerusalem, and to innumerable angels in festal gathering, and to the assembly of the firstborn who are enrolled in heaven, and to God, the judge of all. All right, let's just pause there for a moment. If that's where the statement ends, you've come to God, who is the judge of all. And we've heard everybody has an appointment with this king. All of human history ultimately flows to this mountain. This is where the story reaches its end. And we're all going to stand before the king, and the king is judge of all. And if that's where the statement ends, good news or bad news? Bad news. Why? Because there have been plenty of times that my hands have not been clean and my heart has not been pure. And I heard from Psalm 24 that the only one who's able to go up to this mountain and it be a pleasant experience is the one who has clean hands and a pure heart and who has not lifted up his or her soul to what is false. And you're telling me that one day I'm going to stand before the greatest reality in the universe. He's the judge of all. And I have not honored him as the holy God that he is. He gifted me with life and I have not lived it the way it was meant to be lived. That's really bad news. But we thank God this morning that that's not where the train of thought ends. You've come to God, the judge of all, and to the spirits of the righteous made perfect. Notice what he does not say. He does not say, you have come to the spirits of the righteous who are perfect. He does not say, you came to the spirits of the righteous who lived perfectly. Now, here are people who were made perfect. They weren't perfect. You doubt that? Read Genesis. You know, it's easy for us to, if we just hear about Abraham in sermons and Bible classes, to think, well, man, I mean, what a tremendous example of faith. I could never be like Abraham. And if that's you this morning, could I gently push back and say, it's probably been a little while since you actually read about Abraham. Abraham wasn't perfect. Far from it. Abraham made a whole lot of messes of a whole lot of things. But we're talking about people who were made perfect. How so? Next verse. It all depends upon Jesus, who is the mediator of a new covenant. There was a covenant that the children of Israel entered into through Moses at the foot of Mount Sinai, and you read the next few pages and you figure out really quickly, they weren't faithful to that covenant. But we haven't been called to Mount Sinai. We have not been called to that covenant. There's a new covenant. And Moses isn't the mediator of that covenant. The Son of God Himself is the mediator of that covenant. We've come to sprinkled blood that speaks a better word than the blood of Abel. And there's a lot there, but what I want you to see for our purposes this morning is this covenant involves blood. Blood has been shed in order for me to hear, come. And it's already happened. We're not waiting for it to happen. We're not hoping for it to happen. No, if we use this analogy of a mountain and climbing up this mountain, the trailhead at the base of this mountain is marked by a cross. I mentioned that I love spending time in the mountains. I grew up in the Smoky Mountains, and you've probably seen signs like this all over the Smoky Mountains if you've visited there before. It's a trailhead, right? It's what you see at the very bottom, the very beginning of a trail, and it tells you exactly where this trail is going to go and where it's going to end and how far it is to get where this trail leads. What a beautiful picture we're being invited to see. There is a mountain of the Lord, and the house of the Lord is on this mountain. And many are saying, come, let us go up to the mountain of the house of the Lord, that we may walk in His ways and learn what it means to live in His paths. And just when I begin to feel like I've done too much, I've seen too much, I've wallowed in too much, there's no way that I deserve to go up that mountain. And the answer, of course, is I don't deserve to go up that mountain. Someone has made the way for sinners to be made righteous. And so this trailhead is marked by a cross, and there are droplets of blood all along the way. Quickly, let's go in our Bibles to the Gospel of Matthew chapter 7. When we think about this way, and we think about the one who has made the way available, do you remember what He said in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 13? Matthew 7 verse 13, enter by the narrow gate. You and I do not get to decide where we want to start walking. And we don't get to snap our fingers or wish that, okay, where I am, I would like to start here, and that's where I want to end up, and I'm going to pave my own trail. It doesn't work like that. The trailhead is marked by a cross. That's the gate. It's already been defined. I can't make my own. And the one who's made it available tells us most of the people around us aren't going to pass through that gate. The gate is wide and the way is easy that leads to destruction, and those who enter by it are many. For the gate is narrow and the way is hard. And those who find it are few. But where does it lead? It leads to life. This is the good news that was preached. The good news that has been preached for thousands of years. And in the meantime, what we are told over and over and over again is, let not your hearts be troubled. You remember Jesus' words in John 14? Let not your hearts be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's house. You remember what's at the top of this mountain? The house of the Lord. And many who are inviting. Right? In my Father's house are many rooms. The one who has been there has told us so. If it were not so, would I have told you that I go to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come and will take you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also. An invitation to meet God on the mountains. Now, Lord willing, we're going to look at five different ones from Scripture. But I hope laying this groundwork helps us to realize what a precious idea this is. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm looking forward to it. And I hope our time together is an encouragement to you.